Chapter 4. Indeed, a great many things confounded Childermas that day. The water spirit in the garden, which he viewed with frank and unfriendly disbelief, though the water spirit, in contrast, took to him at once, and further seemed somewhat besotted with him, and began to spout little fountains of water whenever he was nearby, a showiness for which Secundus rebuked it, and the flourishing rose bushes and many other aspects of the garden, and the spell for ridding the house of dust, which Secundus was determined to try. "Where did you learn such a spell?" Childermas asked, with a dubious expression, when Secundus had finished explaining it. "Oh, in a book," Secundus said vaguely. "Which book?" "I do not recall exactly." Childermas stared at him hard for a long time. "There are very few books of magic in this realm." "And whose fault is that?" Secundus asked, precipitating a short, heated argument on the topic, followed by a long and sullen silence. Childermas trailed after him while he went from room to room in the house, setting the parameters of the spell. The nature of the magic required that Secundus make a number of marks upon each doorway, indicating that any object entering through it would become subject to the spell's law. Childermas seemed very interested in inspecting these marks, though Secundus was very concerned that he would disturb the chalk, and in consequence kept worriedly batting his hands away. "Your spell implies an entire theory of magical alliances," Childermas observed as they were finishing a light lunch. "I did not know you had such a theory. Or was it contained in this mysterious book as well?" He raised a dark eyebrow and took a delicate sip of wine. "It was," Secundus said cautiously, and proceeded to explain about leech cloths and sewing the rooms of the house together, and the importance of time as a substance in spells. He could see Childermas attempting not to be interested. It was like watching someone try not to fall asleep. Every so often, Childermas's attention would wander, and he would lapse into enthusiasm, which for him was a fierce, sharp-edged, and full-force kind of thing. Then he would recall that he had meant to be suspicious rather than interested, and he would go back to pretending to be disengaged. Secundus was quite amused by this deception. Childermas, he thought, had many considerable talents, but he was not very good at hiding his nature, and his nature was at root one of curiosity. The conversation went on for quite a while. Childermas smoked two pipes during it. Secundus made a show of complaining about this, for he felt it did not do to encourage such habits indoors, but secretly he very much enjoyed the scent. It seemed to belong, in some indefinable way, to a home. This was very curious, for his family home had not smelled of tobacco, nor had he ever felt a strong attachment to that home. He did not know how one formed an idea of home. The process was wholly mysterious to him. The sun had begun to set by the time they fell into silence. Late sunlight streamed through the high panes of the windows. Childermas cleared his throat. "Well," he said, "I must beg your pardon for colonizing such a deal of your time." "It has been my pleasure," Secundus said, and was surprised to find he meant it. "It is a delight to me to talk of magic with those who understand it. They are fewer than one would imagine, I find. However, I am aware that I may keep you from your own researches, in which case..." "Not at all," Childermas said. He had said it a little too quickly, and seemed to realize it. "But your own researches..." "What a pair of retired old gentlemen we sound," Secundus said wryly. "Soon we shall sit at our writing desks all day, penning vituperative letters to the editors of scholarly publications." Childermas assumed a rather guilty expression. "I too," Secundus admitted shamefacedly. "The ivy and the scepter, after last April's debacle. Not one of which they have so far chosen to print. I believe they view me rather as a nuisance." "They are the poorer for it," said Childermas. It was such an unexpectedly kind comment that Secundus flushed. "Well," he said, "they are all London magicians. I have quite affiliated myself with the country. There is a divide." Childermas made a dismissive sound. "Magic comes from the north," he said. "It does not come from London, nor from gentlemen in nice houses." "No," Secundus said. "I suppose that is true. I do not find them all that interesting either, I must confess." "No," Childermas said. They looked at each other. This time it was Secundus who cleared his throat. "I was," he said, "thinking of adapting the spell I previously described. There are a number of leaks in the roof. I do not think you have observed them. You have not been here during a very hard rain. But the question of additions to the house is a queer one. That is, of structural additions. And so I wonder if you might offer your input." Childermas was very happy to offer his input. They walked about Staircross, inspecting various elements of the ceiling, sticking their fingers into niches and nooks, and getting altogether covered in dust and plaster. Once, Segundus accidentally put his hand through a wall that turned out to be little more than paint and sawdust. "It is like restoring the hall all over again," he complained. "I thought I would only have to do it once. I come to find it is more like gardening than I expected."
"But you do not mind gardening," Childermas said gravely.
He had laughed when Segundus put his hand through the wall, and been reprimanded, and now affected an air of mock solemnity. "I suppose I do not," Segundus frowned, and squinted at a spiderweb in the corner of a hallway. "One never seems to achieve very much, but then perhaps achievement is a young man's game."
"Hark at you," Childermas said dryly, "the old man of the mountain."
Segundus waved a dusting cloth at him, which made him sneeze. That night, after the oddly peaceful evening had concluded, and he had seen Childermas off to bed, Segundus retired, with a certain amount of anticipation. Not only did he have a great deal to discuss with Miss Absalom, he felt, but he had not at all forgotten what they had postponed. And, indeed, she was waiting for him, clad in a Chinese silk robe the color of spring moss, and stretched out on the bed. Segundus began shedding clothes as soon as he saw her, which resulted in his hopping awkwardly for a moment as he pulled off his stockings, and then in his half-tumbling forwards onto the sheets as he stripped his shirt off. He did not very much mind this, as they were both laughing, and then he was pressing her down and kissing her, and then she was tumbling him over and kissing him, her hair falling in a ripe and jasmine-scented curtain, her mouth tasting faintly of rosewater. "You owe me," she said, smiling breathlessly against his mouth. "How will you repay me for your desertion?" He said contentedly, pushing the robe off her shoulders. "I think you shall have to take whatever payment you like from me." Miss Absalom seemed to find this amenable, for she kissed him again. Then, all at once, she pulled back and cocked her head as though she was listening to something, a noise that Segundus could not hear. Her face grew very exasperated. "What a nuisance," she said. She made a sharp gesture with one hand, and abruptly they were both wearing clothing, a state that Segundus did not very much wish to be in, though her own clothing consisted of the Chinese silk robe, now belted, and some very expensive items of jewelry, notably ruby earrings that had the appearance of blood drops, and a ferocious amber dragon pendant fully as big as Segundus's hand. "What?" Segundus protested. He might have protested more, but he was rather awed by the sight of her in this regalia. Miss Absalom tossed her hair behind her shoulders and flung herself back beside him on the bed. "There," she said, and snapped her fingers at the ceiling. Childermas crashed spectacularly out of it. It was not a very dignified position for a man to be in. The house being a dream house, one might have supposed there was not much to it in the way of construction, but, perhaps because Miss Absalom was extraordinarily irritated, Childermas was covered in gray dust to the point of being ghost-like, and spitting plaster chips out of his mouth nevertheless. He was also sprawled on the bedroom floor, looking thoroughly dumbfounded. "Childermas?" Segundus demanded, outraged, just as Miss Absalom said. "John Childermas!" Childermas's gaze flickered from one to the other. His forehead creased as though he were attempting to absorb some difficult notion. "In my defense," he said at last, "before you begin, I had no notion I was intruding upon a lady's boudoir. He appeared to mentally run through the range of options. Have I had the pleasure, so far as I know?" "You certainly have not," Miss Absalom said, very scornfully. She was capable, as it turned out, of a blisteringly high degree of scorn. Segundus was quite impressed, and a little frightened. "My name is Mariah Absalom, and you, sir, are trespassing in my house." "And in my dream," Segundus said. He did not wish his indignation to be overlooked. What right had Childermas to be in his dream? It was the most intimate of violations.
"Yes," Childermas said. "That part I knew." He did not look very apologetic.
"You knew?" Segundus said, aghast.
Childermas shrugged. "You would not be honest about the matter. I thought something was amiss." He blinked at Miss Absalom. "I perceive now it would have been a trifle difficult to explain."
Miss Absalom said fiercely, "What right do you think you have to an explanation?"
Childermas was silent for a moment. "None, I suppose," he said. His face and voice had both grown very composed. He stood, and, brushing more plaster off his sleeves, he made a little bow.
"I beg your pardon," he said to Miss Absalom. "I am sorry to have intruded."
"To Segundus," he said, "I will go." Something about the way he said this made Segundus realize that he did not mean he would leave the dream. He meant he would go. A strange, blind surge of panic rose up within him. He did not wholly understand it. He stared at Childermas. He felt tremendously angry and hurt, and as though something very small and nascent, a damp baby bird or a vulnerable crocus, had been stamped out ruthlessly. Most of all, he felt very unhappy. Miss Absalom was looking between Segundus and Childermas with an air of bewilderment.
"Oh," she said suddenly, at last.
Childermas was turning to go.
"Why did you not say so?" Miss Absalom demanded of Segundus.
She had turned an accusatory stare on him.
"Say what?"
Segundus was very honestly befuddled, and also inexplicably forlorn.
"That you wanted him. It is very convenient that he wants you as well. We could have arranged it ages ago."
Segundus felt even more befuddled.
"I don't," he said, "but he... does he... do I?"
He gazed helplessly at her.
"Oh, honestly," Miss Absalom said, "you caused me to recall why I never married."
"No," she said to Childermas, turning sharply towards him as he rounded the doorway. "I rather think that for the time being you'd better stay here."
Childermas slunk back into the room, looking distinctly unexcited.
"You are wrong," he said to Miss Absalom, "and it is better that I go." Miss Absalom sighed irritably.
"Do not lie to me. You only further your disrespect. It is in your face whenever you look at him."
"That is not what I meant."
She blinked.
"Well, of course he does. I cannot think why I did not see it before."
Childermas said, "But you..."
He gestured.
"I am not proposing to give him up," she laughed incredulously.
"Certainly not. Would you?"
Childermas's eyes flicked to Segundus.
"No," he conceded. Segundus covered his face with his hands.
"I am not a valise," he complained.
He thought he was probably flushing rather red.
"Why must you talk about me as though I am not here?"
Childermas shrugged. "You did not seem to be saying very much."
"That is because I do not understand."
Segundus could not keep his voice from rising. He sounded, he thought, sad and petulant, which was not how he wanted to sound, but was perhaps a fair representation of his heart. He had never felt so... Childermas kissed him. This was so astonishing an act that for a moment Segundus was not quite sure what to do. He floundered. It was a very appealing kiss. It tasted slightly of tobacco and slightly of Segundus's apple wine, which they had shared by the fireside before going to bed. They had been arguing about the extent to which a London magician could be said to truly understand English magic, and whether it were necessary for such a person to seek out a sort of baptism in the North in order to cleanse himself of his Londonness. It had not been a terribly serious conversation. Segundus had confessed to the shame of coming from Oxfordshire. "But," he'd said with a wry smile, "perhaps my soul was always of the North." Childermas had not returned his smile.
"Perhaps there is a bit of the North wherever there are souls such as yours," he'd said.
It had been such an oddly solemn comment. Like a love letter, Segundus thought. Like something you would write in a love letter.
"Oh," he thought.
He kissed Childermas back. A little tentatively at first. He did not feel he quite knew what he was doing yet. He had a great sense that he did not want to break what he was holding, although he was holding nothing. And then he was holding Childermas in his hands, touching his hands very carefully to Childermas's face. And then suddenly he did not feel very tentative at all. He did not know what he was doing, but he knew, he thought, what he wanted. He set his hands at Childermas's waist and pushed eagerly forwards against his mouth, working it open even as he tugged Childermas's shirt tails loose to get his hands underneath them and onto his bare skin. Childermas himself, having precipitated the kiss, seemed quite unsure what he was meant to do next. He was standing very still with his hands in Segundus's hair. When Segundus skimmed his fingertips up his chest, he made a sighing sound,
and when those same fingertips scraped his nipples, he gasped. Segundus rubbed up against him languorously with his whole body, allowing Childermas to feel that he was growing hard for him, and licked his way into Childermas's mouth in a very suggestive fashion. Childermas said, sounding dazed,
"I thought you would be... virginal?" Miss Absalom suggested.
She was lying across the bed, watching them with what appeared to be intense enjoyment.
"Yes, no, I do not..."
"Am I not what you wanted?" Segundus said, half in jest. He could not conceal the faint uncertainty in his voice, so different to the confidence of his hands. He had, he thought, slightly wanted to show off for Childermas, and produce exactly this reaction. "How skilled you are, how talented, how good you make me feel." Perhaps this was disingenuous of him, but he did want to make Childermas feel good. He had a great many tangled up wants when it came to Childermas. He wanted to force Childermas into abandoning his pretense at stone-facedness and reveal the soft, curious, wandering person who lay inside, whom Segundus had been so lucky as to glimpse here and there. He wanted to make Childermas laugh, which fractured that stone-facedness. He wanted to see Childermas thrash in the grip of pleasure. Oh, that image opened a dozen more doorways. Childermas arching up from a disarrayed bed, Childermas tossing his head back and moaning, Childermas with his wrists bound to the bed.
"You are daydreaming," Childermas said. He sounded amused.
He touched Segundus's face with a tender hand.
"I want you, virgin or wanton. I have spent a great deal of time wanting you. I have thought in considerable detail of how I would want you."
"I was daydreaming about how I want you," Segundus confessed. Childermas looked extremely interested in this topic. And Childermas's interest, as Segundus had so many times observed, was fast and forceful and full of sharp edges. It was one of the things about Childermas that he found most attractive, that overwhelming interest.
"What conclusions did you draw?" Childermas said.
He smiled slightly, as though he could see the effect he was having. Segundus moved a little closer and slid his hands down Childermas's back, past the waist, to where his buttock began to slope. "That I would like to pleasure you," he said, "if it is agreeable to the lady with whom I have a certain understanding."
"It is very agreeable to the lady," Miss Absalom said.
"I find the idea of such a thing delicious. Only I wish to have you after, as I am yet unfulfilled."
"Is that all right?" Segundus asked.
He risked a look up at Childermas's eyes.
"I know it is not conventional. You are free to watch us. You are free to watch us now, if you prefer."
The thought of Childermas watching as he took Miss Absalom, as she rode him, perhaps, touching herself as she displayed where his prick pushed inside her, was very appealing, to say the least. Childermas said, "I have resisted for a long time the urge to touch you. I do not think I should like to give the chance up now." He let his hands rest at Segundus's waist.
"The chance will not disappear at daybreak."
Segundus did not know how to explain to Childermas that he felt in his own heart the gentleness that he saw in Childermas's face, which promised affection, but also more, and which asked very humbly not to be betrayed. Because he did not know how to explain, he touched Childermas instead, drawing him forwards carefully and lifting his shirt off, then kissing all the parts of him in a long line descending from throat to hip bone. Childermas did not make much sound, but rested his arms around Segundus lightly, as though very tentatively enclosing him.
"Oh," he said, when Segundus reached for his breeches buttons.
"Perhaps," Segundus suggested,
"you might sit on the bed."
Childermas looked at the bed. He looked at Miss Absalom, who was angled so as to occupy a great deal of it. She looked at him in return, rather curiously.
"You do not need to be afraid of me," she said.
Kindly, Segundus thought, and with no hint of condescension. Childermas seemed yet uncertain of this, but he sat on the bed and allowed Segundus to remove his breeches and stockings. Segundus, kneeling, could not help doing as had previously been done to him, and lingering in all the unexpected places of the body, the ankles, the knees, the turn of the hips. Childermas's body was so different to Miss Absalom's, thin where she was soft and lavish, all hard angles where she was welcoming, rounded. The differences fascinated Segundus. Childermas's prick fascinated him. Such a statement of want where it stood out from his body, and a kind of barometer of pleasure in the way it twitched and hardened. Secundus cupped it lightly and felt it respond. He licked it, and it responded again. He lowered his mouth very deliberately onto it and heard a double intake of breath. He did not look up, but sucked slowly and consideringly, pulling off to tongue with fascination at the glossy head, then lowering his mouth once more. He found the act not perhaps as interesting as he might have liked. It was very repetitious, and he could not fit all of Childermas into his mouth. He gagged a little when he tried to take him deeply in, and though this produced further gasps from Childermas and Miss Absalom, almost but not quite in unison, it was not very enjoyable. So he pulled off once more, and instead moved lower, and wetly licked at Childermas's scrotum, then the skin beyond, and his taut entrance. It was at this point that Childermas, breathing hard, brought a hand up to his hair. Secundus felt a little triumphant. He licked hard at that strip of skin, which made Childermas's hand twitch, and then set himself to exploring that entrance. He recalled the bright sensations that Miss Absalom had evoked in this location, a heat that had built under his skin, but that at the same time had reminded him a little of champagne, the way the bubbles, like stars, burst all through it. This was what he wanted to give to Childermas. So he applied himself to opening that flesh with his tongue, both caressing and subtly pushing at it. Childermas said in a hazy voice, "Oh my God." His hand went very heavy on Secundus's head. "He has a very gifted tongue," Miss Absalom agreed from behind him. Her own tone was somewhat breathless. "Isn't he beautiful when he wants to give you pleasure, when he loses himself in it?" Secundus could not decide if he ought to be indignant about this description, but he could not very well respond to it. Instead, he began thrusting his tongue in sharp, pointing little flickers, which made Childermas cry out and push forwards to him. Secundus rewarded him by pushing a finger in as well, being very firm and gentle with it. He pulled back to enjoy the spectacle of Childermas taking his finger. Above him, Childermas looked rather wrecked. The color was high in his face, and he was staring at Secundus with dumb wonder. Secundus moved his finger in and out, and Childermas bit his lip, harder, deeper, and Childermas made a dark sound. "You like that?" Secundus said, in a low voice that he almost did not recognize. He was amazed by how it affected him, the knowledge that he could undo Childermas with pleasure. He bent his head and looked at the wet tip of Childermas's prick, just to see what result it would have. Childermas's hand clenched in the bedclothes. His prick was very heavy and very stiff. He was probably at the stage where he ached for climax. Secundus pressed another finger in. He felt the tight flesh quiver and yield slightly around him. "Would you like me to take you?" he wondered, more as an idle thought. "Do you like being penetrated?" "That is not fair," Miss Absalom interjected. "I wish for you to take me." She was touching herself as she watched, her robe now open, and two slick fingers making lazy circles between her legs. Secundus said, "You have had me numerous times already, but I like to feel your prick inside me, pressing inside me, very solid and deep." Childermas made a choked kind of sound. The top of his prick dripped. "You like that as well," Secundus said curiously. "So you do want to watch?" "I," Childermas said. He appeared to be struggling for words. He closed his eyes. "I want everything of you. I wish to see you take your pleasure. I want to see your face when..." Secundus had to close his own eyes. He rested his hot face against Childermas's leg. He said helplessly, "You may have what you want, only I do not know how to satisfy both of you." Childermas seemed to consider the matter, stroking gently against Secundus's hair, occasionally sighing heavily when Secundus did something clever with his hand. "Give her her pleasure," he said at last, "and then let me have mine. Can you do that? Will you last?" "I will try," Secundus said. He kissed Childermas's thigh. "You are very generous." "There is nothing generous about it." Childermas showed a flicker of a smile. "I have the sense I am about to be given a show." Miss Absalom laughed aloud at that, but she did not deny it. She beckoned to Secundus. "Come," she said. "Shall we be dramatic?" So Secundus disattached himself from Childermas and removed his clothing with great haste. No sooner had he embraced Miss Absalom, greeting her with kisses, than she was pressing him down flat on the bed and easing herself down onto his prick. He groaned at the feeling of it, for he had grown very hard while pleasuring Childermas, and the interior of her was unbearably delightful. But she was moving hardly at all, instead keeping him wholly inside her, which was hard for him to stand. "Look," she said to Childermas, as though he were not looking. To Segundus, he seemed utterly transfixed. His hand was around the base of his prick. But here was what Miss Absalom had meant. She opened the folds of herself so Childermas could clearly see where she was stretched around Segundus's prick, then rose very slowly and lowered herself once more, displaying every inch of the slide of him into her, showing Childermas how deep he went. "Jesus Christ," Childermas said hoarsely. His hand moved very fast on his prick. Miss Absalom repeated the motion, this time moaning very loudly as she sank down upon him. "He feels so good," she said, "keeping me so full. Come here, come touch and see." Childermas hesitated fractionally before obeying the injunction. His hand was trembling when he raised it to where they were joined. He touched the slick flesh of Segundus's prick, stroking just a fingertip against it. It was enough to make Segundus cry out loudly and thrust helplessly upward for a moment. The sensation of that fingertip, when he was already buried inside Miss Absalom, being gripped hot and wet. "Go on," Miss Absalom said. "Feel more. Put your finger inside me." And Childermas did as she said. He let his fingertip probe at where Miss Absalom was stretched tight, and, after a few tries, a few sharp bitten-off cries from Segundus, it pushed very tightly within, hard against Segundus's prick and rubbing at it slightly. Segundus's breath sobbed in his throat. "Oh God," he said. "Oh my God." Miss Absalom herself was breathing hard. She was working at herself now with her hand as she rubbed them both in slow, rapturous movements. It was not easy for her to take them both in, and every time she did so anew, Segundus felt the sound ripped from him. He was amazed that he had not climaxed already, and he could only think that it was too much, the feel of her impossibly taut, impossibly wet, and the look of almost agony on her face as she labored frantically towards her climax, and the feel of Childermas touching him inside her, his face awed and eyes gone almost black with a concentration of desire. "I can't," he said, and then, "I can't, I'm going to." "Not yet," Childermas said, and kissed him, which at least distracted him from the unendurably exciting spectacle, so that, though he suspected he sank his teeth very hard into Childermas's lip, he did not finish when he felt Miss Absalom climax around him. It was a near thing. There were no words for the feeling of it. Childermas slipped his finger out of her as she panted atop Segundus. It was glistening with her wetness. He touched it to Segundus's lip, and Segundus let it penetrate his mouth, sucking the taste of Miss Absalom off of it. He saw Childermas's breath shudder as he did so, Childermas's eyes drawn magnetically toward his lips. He released the finger with a filthy, wet sound. "Please," he said. "Please, I'm so close. Tell me what you want. I want to give you anything you want. Anything." Childermas kissed him again. It was a long, slightly aggressive kiss. It was sweet, lingering, hungry, but with a hint of violence. "You will wait," he said, "to give me what I want, won't you?" "Oh," Segundus breathed out. Then, "Oh," as Miss Absalom shifted off him. He had to close his eyes and dig his fingers into the bedsheet so as not to touch himself, so acute was his desire for release. Cool fingers settled on his brow, in his hair. He could smell Miss Absalom, a certain post-coital aroma she had, like late sunshine and overripe lilies, the end of summer, tinged with a touch of human sweat. He turned his head towards her blindly. "Shh," she said. "Shh. I know how good you can be for him. You want to be very good, don't you?" "Yes, yes." A hand touched his prick, and he cried out, hips arching upwards. Miss Absalom tugged his hair sharply, a flash of pain. He moaned. She said, "Not yet." But Childermas was. Segundus opened his eyes hazily and saw Childermas kneeling over him, gazing at him with an almost animal desire, reaching, and then... Segundus's prick pushed just into the clenched hole of his body. The precise star of muscle where he had previously licked, the softest, hottest, most delicate skin. This was what Childermas was giving him. His most delicate part, to hold him and enclose him, to force him with its fist-like grip towards completion. The weight of Childermas pinned him to the bed, and Segundus reached up for him blindly, grasping him at odd angles, putting hands wherever he could reach. The rounds of his knees, the curve of his hips, the hot flash of his prick. Childermas moved, rocking on him, taking him deep in his body, and Segundus made a punched-out noise. Miss Absalom knotted her hand in his hair and pulled once more, jerking his head towards her. "Not yet," she said, "not yet." Segundus wanted to explain that he did not want to come yet, that he wanted to stay inside Childermas forever, pleasing him, fucking him, that he wanted to stare at Childermas exactly as he was now, kneeling as though in prayer, with his dark hair in his face, naked and soft-eyed, and with Segundus's prick sliding into him, the most obscene and the most beautiful sight Segundus could imagine. He wanted to explain that he did not want to, but that he did not know how not to do it, with Childermas's body against his body and Miss Absalom's hand in his hair. But he could not manage to say it. He could only moan in fits and starts as Childermas moved on him. He entirely lost track of the world but for the hot plunge of flesh into flesh, and from time to time the sharp pain of Miss Absalom reining him in, forcing him back from the edge. He was aware of Childermas working himself fast, his breath stuttering in huffs, and Childermas's eyes burning down at him, and he said something inarticulate, the sort of thing you can only say in dreams, because if you said it in the waking world it would not make any sense. Then he was crying out and climaxing unstoppably. Childermas continued riding him for a few long moments before giving a sort of startled sigh and opening his eyes very wide and shoving down hard and spending himself on Segundus's chest. Childermas was still moving softly. Segundus was still holding onto his hips. He felt a great sense of peace that he had not known before. He raised his hand and Childermas caught hold of it, and they stared at each other, shivering a little. Miss Absalom yawned and stretched and pulled Segundus to her, making room for Childermas on the other side of him. Childermas eased himself off of Segundus and into that space. Segundus, caught between them like a pearl cradled between two rough oyster halves, sighed comfortably and drew them both closer. Their bodies were warm. He pressed his face to Childermas's shoulder and felt Miss Absalom mold herself against his back. She stroked his arm. Childermas ran a hand through his hair, then let his palm rest at the back of Segundus's neck. Segundus said drowsily, wriggling slightly in satisfaction. I could sleep like this. Only I do not wish to sleep, for I am already asleep, and I wish to stay here. There was a short silence. Childermas said, "Your logic remains as dubious as ever." "You are mistaken," Segundus informed him. "But I will permit you to remain in my bed, because I am a generous person." "It is my bed," Miss Absalom said. "But I suppose I do not mind if you both stay." "That is gracious of you," Segundus said gravely. Childermas appeared close to sleep, which was very endearing. His hand had grown heavy on Segundus's neck. When Segundus risked a glance up, his eyes were drifting closed. He did not go to sleep, though. He wrinkled his nose and said vaguely, "What is that noise?" Segundus made a questioning sound, a sort of "That noise, that bird noise, you must hear it." "No," Segundus said, by which he did not mean, "No, I do not hear it," for he could hear it now, if only faintly, like birds from a very long way off, possibly miles, but rather a more general refusal to acknowledge the interruption. He buried himself further into Childermas's shoulder, tugging Miss Absalom's arm tightly around him. "No," he said again, for emphasis. Miss Absalom muttered something exasperated-sounding against his back. Segundus was about to ask her if she could quiet the birds, for they seemed to be drawing closer, and he wished to rest, but even as he thought this, he became aware that the noise would wake him. He clung to the last vestiges of the dream with drowsy hands. The feel of Miss Absalom's breath warm against his shoulder, Childermas's soft prick pressed against his leg, The faint smell of sex, damp and overripe and fecund, a lazy, salacious, flowering scent. But it was no use. Sleep was unspooling him from himself, and before he knew it, he was waking in his own bed.